Non, non, non.
Je sais pas.
Eh ben alors, peut-être dire bienvenue à tout le monde, c'est un peu bizarre parce qu'il y a déjà tout le monde qui est là depuis un moment. Aujourd'hui, nous avons une ancienne thésarde du LAM qui a terminé sa thèse au LAM il y a 4 ans et qui était plus que la responsable, en fait, celle qui gérait totalement le Café Club. Moi, je figurais uniquement comme personne inutile pour valider, mais bon, si ça marche, c'est toujours grâce à Anna, je dirais. Anna a donc fait un premier postdoc à Ben Gurion avec Adi, Alizitrin, en travaillant sur le Lensing, et elle avait fait sa thèse avec Eric et Marceau. Eric Julot et Marceau. Et depuis quelques mois, depuis octobre, non pas, peut-être entendu, elle est à Milano, en travaillant avec les noms plus connus, enfin, pas moi, peut-être, c'est Piero Rosati. Et quand vous avez entendu, elle vient de recevoir, enfin, d'avoir une fellowship Marie Curie pour les prochaines années. J'invite tout le monde à allumer la caméra s'il souhaite et poser des questions aussi durant le talk. Merci Anna, c'est à toi.
D'accord. Par contre, je parle en anglais. Enfin,
You're right. Usually I present in English, so please go ahead in English.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm used to make presentations in English, so it would be a
And
bit of
also,
a
I
shock.
used to present the people in English, but I forgot.
Sorry. Okay. So, yeah, first of all, I would like to thank kindly the organizers for inviting me to give this talk. And today I will present some of the work that I did or I was involved in during my previous postdoc at Ben Gurion University, and mainly in collaboration with Adi Zitrin and also the RELIX team. So today I will give a brief overview of this recent HST survey, RELIX, which has targeted a large number of lensing clusters. I will also then present some of the work that I was involved in within this collaboration. So basically building strong lensing models for some of these clusters in order to study the high redshift magnify background galaxies. I will discuss in detail later. Okay, so it's very important to build or to identify a large sample of high redshift galaxies, so at the redshift of above 6, which would allow us to better understand the evolution of the universe at that epoch. So as you all probably know, the universe underwent a phase transition from being predominantly neutral at recombination, so at the redshift of about 1100, here to being almost fully ionized by a redshift of 6. So this landmark process is called reionization. So there are still numerous questions that are still unanswered or partly answered, and therefore it's important to build a statistical sample of high redshift galaxies in order to address these questions. So some of them are, for example, when the first sources appear, what sources reionize the universe, and also to study the assembly and evolution of galaxies and their more individual properties as morphology, dynamics, and so on. So by building a statistical sample of high redshift galaxies, we can then study global properties of these objects. So by building luminosity functions and so on, as well as the physical properties of these high redshift objects, for example, the star formation rate, IMF, metallicity, and so on. And this is important to remember because strong lensing models will play an important part to measure these quantities reliably. So strong lensing models, this is mainly what I'm interested in. And it allows for a large variety of science cases. For example, they are dark matter dominated, so they allow us, we are able to map the dark matter, underlying dark matter distributions of these objects. High redshift sources are also magnified. So this can be very useful because otherwise, with this magnification effect from these clusters, these galaxies, because they are so faint, wouldn't be detected with our current state-of-the-art facilities and telescopes. So also sometimes these sources can be even resolved, which can allow us to study the physical properties of these very high redshift sources. Because we are reaching as well for galaxies that are intrinsically fainter, we can also put constraints on the faint end of the luminosity function. And also as a completely separate subject, we can also use these clusters to do cosmology. So why are strong lensing models so important? So first of all, they can provide us with hints. I write here of the redshift of multiple image sources. So as you all know, I hope these galaxy clusters will present multiple images, which are multiple images of the same background source. Sometimes we don't have access to spectroscopic redshifts of these sources, and strong lensing models can provide us with hint of these galaxies being from the same background source, and so on. But also, which is very important for the science case of the RELIX survey, strong lensing models are crucial in order to correct the observable, for example, the sizes, the luminosity, star formation rate, stellar mass, and so on, of these background sources, which are magnified, have to be corrected for the magnification introduced by these strong lensing foreground structures. Okay, so now moving on to the RELIX survey. So it's a recent HST Treasury program. The PI is DanCo. It was built with around 190 orbits, targeting 41 cluster fields. So as you may compare to other programs, such as the Hubble Frontier Fields, for example, the strategy of the survey is rather to observe in a shallower depth these cluster fields, but observing a large number of galaxy clusters, so 41 cluster fields, which makes in total 200 arcminutes square. So so as I mentioned, the strategy is to go like to a larger area, but shallower. So you can see here the distribution in redshift of the cluster sample. So spanning a fairly large redshift range for around 0.2 to almost 1. And we have targeted massive clusters, which are expected to be powerful strong lenses. And you can see here the distribution in red, as red squares of these 41 fields, in the mass versus redshift plot here. And you can see here that these clusters were selected also based on the Planck SD mass. So some of them were just, half of them were basically solely selected due to their Planck mass, and others were added either because they were known efficient strong lenses, or using other estimators such as weak lensing, X-ray, and so on. So here, just the pretty pictures of the 41 cluster fields. So you can see that they have very different morphologies for being more virilized and stable, like one single halo and so on, to being very elongated with many, many substructures, merging clusters, for example, here. So this allows us to therefore build a sample of galaxy candidates above a redshift of 6. So this is presented in this paper, so Salmon et al. 2017. And in this plot, we are basically summarizing the state of the art, or where we at in the detection of this high redshift galaxy. So you can see in orange, red, the galaxy candidates from relics. So I say candidates because they are based on, or this identification is based for now solely on photometry. So they use the multiband HST and Spitzer photometry to calculate the photometric redshift of these objects, both with the BPZ and EZ softwares. So of course, these galaxies or these samples still require a spectroscopy confirmation of most of these objects, I would say. Another interesting object would be this magnified galaxy here, which is, you can see it's in the form of an extended arc and would be at the redshift of 10, but this still requires spectroscopic confirmation. So you can see as well the comparison with other very known surveys such as the frontier field, scandals, and so on. So this is mainly the state of the art before the James Webb Space Telescope, and we hope that these new observations will greatly improve this plot, or will further fill in this plot. So as I mentioned, I'm mainly interested in clusters as lenses, and I would just would like to make a brief recap of how we do this strong lensing modeling of these galaxy clusters, as I will mention some different techniques later on. So there are different ways to model the mass distribution of galaxy clusters. So we can use parametric models, for example, which I show here a sketch of how it works. So basically, this is an observationally motivated strategy of modeling, and we decompose the total mass distribution into halos, for example, the cluster member galaxies in green, and the underlying dark matter distribution here in magenta, which are parametrized with physically motivated density profiles, for example, the NFW and so on. On the other hand, there are also what we called non-parametric or free-form models and also hybrid models. So in this case, I'm showing a hybrid model. So the underlying dark matter distribution is modeled with the grid here. And you can see that in the central regions, so basically where we expect a larger number of constraints, pixels or they can be squares or the cell of this grid are smaller. So this leads to a high resolution modeling of these inner central regions. In the hybrid case, we also include cluster member galaxies modeled as in the parametric way, so being parametrized with a known density profile. And the strategy of modeling that I was using during this work, so I was using the LTM code, which assumes that the mass traces light assumption. So here I'm just showing a sketch of how it works. I will just come with a bit of further details in the next slide. So basically we assume a galaxy component, which are the galaxies in the cluster, which is co-added to the dark matter component and an external shear. So how does this work? So cluster members are first selected, so based on the red sequence method, for example, or if we also have some spectroscopic information of these cluster members, and they are then parametrized with a symmetric power law surface mass density distribution here, which scales linearly in amplitude with luminosity. We take this first step, so this basically will give us a map of this galaxy cluster with picked mass distribution where the galaxies are, and we smooth this component with a 2D Gaussian, which gives us the dark matter distribution. So now we have two components, So the dark matter distribution is created from the cluster member galaxies, and they are then co-added. So we can also give further flexibility. So here we have the contribution from the galaxies, the contribution from the dark matter halos, and we can give also an external shear, which is parametrized with an amplitude and position angle. So with only taking this simple case to build the first strong lensing model, this makes up only 6 free parameters. So with only these 6 free parameters, we can start building a simple strong lensing mass model, which allows us to find in an iterative way or confirm other multiple images and therefore refine this model. And it is a pretty fast pipeline as well. So if you're interested, you can see here, I put other references, which this is explained in much greater detail. Right. So in this work, we were mainly interested at studying exceptionally large lensing clusters. So here I'm putting a bit of a state-of-the-art list of the largest clusters that we have found and modeled with strong lensing. So you can see here, for example, the first one, which is MAX0717, which is a Hubble Frontier Field cluster. And I'm quoting here the Einstein radius, so the sizes of these lenses. So some of them are from the RELIX survey as well. For example, this cluster here was in the RELIX sample. So finding and studying these strong lensing or exceptionally large strong lensing clusters is also important, which because they allow us to put constraints on the cosmology and on the structure evolution of the universe. Okay, so now I will mainly focus on one of these strong lenses that I analyzed, which is RG0032 for short. It's at a redshift of almost 0.4. It is the second richest cluster in the Red Mapper catalog, but it's only the 85th most massive cluster in the Planck catalog. And you can see here the HST imaging from the RELIX survey of this cluster. So as you can already see, it's a very messy, I would say, like elongated with many substructures, probably merging cluster. So we have used, as I mentioned briefly, several techniques to model or several algorithms to model this cluster. So the LTM, which I just presented, and the DPI-ENFW algorithm as well, which is basically from the same pipeline, but it's more similar to the fully parametric techniques, such as the lens tool algorithm. So in this algorithm, we model the halos and the dark matter distribution with physically motivated density profiles. So the lens tool that I mentioned and the Glafic parametric algorithm. So the first step is to identify the multiple images. So here they are color coded. So from one color, they belong to the same background magnified source. And this is just to ease the visualization of the different systems. So you can see here that we have a large number of constraints distributed all along the cluster. So here I'm just showing, just a brief parenthesis, the power of the LTM technique to model this cluster and also to we can see here how the images, so I'm just showing some of the images that were included in the modeling of this within the LTM algorithm. So here at the top row are the observations and the bottom row are our predictions based on our strong lensing best fit model. So you can see that they do correspond pretty well in position and also orientation between the predicted from the lens model and the observations. So we use these different techniques to, I mean, algorithms to analyze this cluster. So you can see here the critical curves from these techniques. So I'm showing here only from the LTM and the DPINFW techniques. So for redshift of 2, the green lines, and then at higher redshift of 9. And you can see that they are more or less fairly in agreement. So this allows us to measure an Einstein radius of about 40 arc seconds, which I'm showing here. And here is a table which summarizes the measurements obtained, so at 2 redshifts, for each technique. And you can see, well, the mean obtained between these techniques for a redshift of 2 is of 40 arc seconds. But you can see here that the systematic uncertainty or the error introduced from modeling these with different algorithms is much larger than that from the statistical uncertainty within one single algorithm. So I think it's important to take this into account, that different algorithms will provide us with different values, and it's important to use these different techniques in order to give robust results, but also error estimations. And I will come back to this a bit later on. Okay. So here I am showing basically the cumulative area above a certain magnification versus magnification. So this means this is showing the lensing strength of these clusters. So, and here we go to like higher magnifications, which these areas will be, of course, rarer than low magnification areas. So you can see here the lines for the different algorithms the cumulative area obtained from the different algorithms models. So these lines here, which I know it's a bit complicated to see because we are showing several clusters as well from the RELIX sample. And you can see here the stars, just the values obtained from 2 magnifications for the Hubble frontier fields. But basically for this cluster, it's showing us that it has a very large lensing strength. So the high magnifications or the large magnification areas are, I would say, above average from the others clusters from this sample. However, when we are looking at this cluster, so this was the work I mentioned by Salmon et al. 2017, they only found three high redshift magnified background galaxies, which are shown here. So this was very surprising. We were expecting, or given the size of this lens, we were expecting a larger number of galaxy candidates. I mean, not even reliably spectroscopically confirmed objects, but just a larger number of candidates. And here I'm just, the black square is just showing the HST field of view. So as you can see, the critical curves are going, I mean, this is for a redshift of 9, they are going well beyond so I think this is the WFC3 field of view of this cluster from HST. And the critical curves are going well beyond this field of view. So it would be interesting to expand the HST coverage around this cluster in order to possibly detect further magnified high redshift sources and possibly alleviate this tension between the expected number of galaxies given the size of the lens and the ones that are actually observed as of today. So this is another counter example, I would say. So it's another cluster from the RELIX survey. So RLG0152, which is at a significantly higher redshift, so about 0.8. So as you can see here, I'm showing again the multiple images detected in order to model this cluster, and also the critical curves, so at a redshift of 2 in green, and 9 in violet. So both these clusters are fairly elongated. They have many substructures, so in this sense they are very similar. But in this case of this RXC0552, even if it's a significantly smaller strong length, so we can see here its size, so with an action radius of about 8.5, we have detected an extremely large number of background galaxy candidates above a redshift of 6 that are shown here in this image. So yes, this was actually surprising, and it might point us to the fact that we might have to target high redshift clusters. So you can see here a plot, so the number of high redshift candidates found per cluster given its redshift and color coded with its mass. So there is a weak correlation with the cluster redshift, so pointing us toward possibly the benefit of targeting high redshift clusters in order to efficiently sample or identify these high redshift background and magnified galaxies. And as you can maybe see, there's a weak correlation with the mass instead. All right, so now as I mentioned a bit the systematic uncertainties, and I briefly said that they do dominate the total error budget. So this was seen, for example, in the case of the answering radius measurements, that the statistical uncertainty within each algorithm was much lower than the standard deviation or the dispersion between the measurements from different techniques. So it's has been a recent effort in the community, in the strong ensemble community, to try to provide a more comprehensive assessment of these systematic uncertainties and the impact they have on the strong lensing modeling and therefore on all the intrinsic properties that we want to measure. So where do these systematic uncertainties can come from? So the redshift information of the multiple images. So this means that, for example, in the case of the RELICS clusters, I would say the vast majority of clusters did not have spectroscopic follow-up, and therefore many of these multiple images were not spectroscopically confirmed. So we are using photometric redshift for these multiple images, which might introduce a bias. Also the modeling assumptions, as I mentioned, so the different techniques assumed in the different algorithms. And they can also come from the lines of sight structures. They can have an impact on the positions of the multiple images and therefore on the mass modeling, and also from the environment, the scaling relation adopted for the cluster member galaxies, and so on. So I marked here in red the ones that I would briefly mention today to study these other lines of sight. The environment and the scaling relations, we would need further follow-up observations, so in both on the spectroscopic side. So as I mentioned, we modeled this cluster with four different techniques, and you can see here the resulting critical curves at the redshift of for a background source redshift of 9. And you can see that they are overall in agreement, and there are several areas that are a bit different. So in this case, in this particular case, the northern area and the southeast area. So I have to mention that these models, so the LTM and the DPI and FW, I built those, so they were not independent, but from these to the lens tool and the graphic models, they were modeled independently by different modeling teams within the collaboration. So not all of us used the same constraints, and therefore this can explain a bit the differences in these two regions, so the northern and southeast region. So here we can see the obtained convergence profile versus radius. So you can see that there are several, I mean, there's a significant difference that cannot be explained from the statistical uncertainties from each algorithm in the central regions of the cluster, but otherwise it's fairly in agreement. We also looked at the magnification estimates from these different techniques. So this cluster had a lens star-forming galaxy, which was at a redshift of about 3.6. As you can see here, that was previously studied in another paper. And we wanted to assess the difference in the magnification estimates we get from these techniques, since in order to study the intrinsic properties of this star-forming galaxy at well, not high redshift, but medium redshift, I would say, we need a reliable magnification estimate. So here, sorry for the table and the numbers, but I will just point you to some of the important things to see. So here are basically the different emission nodes from these multiple images of the system. And each line corresponds to one of the pipelines that we used to measure the magnification of these emission nodes. And here I'm also providing the values that they obtained in this previous paper, which I think they used the lens tool model. So basically, this is a lot of numbers, but you just have to see that the statistical uncertainties that you can see here from each technique are much, much smaller than the standard deviation between these different algorithms. So I would say that the statistical uncertainties clearly underestimate the errors on the magnification that we can get. And it's important to also use other techniques, other algorithms to assess a more, to more robustly assess this error budget. Yes, so I would say that as of now, it's clearly complicated to use these magnification values in order to estimate intrinsic properties of these high redshift galaxies, since the scatter in these values are so large for these modelings. And here, as I mentioned previously, that some of these RELIX clusters do not have a spectroscopic follow-up, and therefore we are working with photometric redshifts. So in this case, because we are not using very reliable spectroscopic redshifts, these redshifts can be actually optimized at the same time that the mass distribution is during the modeling process of these strong lensing algorithms. So here I'm showing the comparison of the predicted redshifts of the multiple images. So they are numbered according to the system, but here for different of these techniques. So for example, the LTM versus the DPI NFW and so on with a lens tool, Clafic and so on. The blue line is just the one-to-one correspondence just to guide the eye. And you can see that actually, there's a very a clear difference between the predicted redshift between these techniques. And also what's more important is that they are not within the error bars from each test, statistically, the statistical error bars from each technique. So again, this points to an underestimation of the total error budget from each technique, I believe that we have to use different algorithms in order to have a more reliable assessment of the uncertainties. So just one note is that, for example, for this cluster, we only had, I think it was one multiply image system that was spectroscopically confirmed. So in the case of other galaxy clusters, or in the future, if we are able to follow up spectroscopically this cluster, we will hopefully be able to measure the redshift of other multiply image systems and therefore build a more robust strong lensing mass modeling that would help us, I hope, converge to similar values of the predicted magnifications and redshift and so on. So this is also a bias that can come from the lack of spectroscopic information for these cluster lenses. So just to finish a bit with an overview on the recent efforts that has been done in the community. So it's been more clear now that systematic uncertainties have to be better understood and assessed. And this has been done both in recent efforts from observations. So this is the comparison on the mass profile of this cluster, Abel 2744, which is a Hubble front of field observed cluster, from different techniques here. And also from simulations. So the reconstruction techniques from different algorithms, so both parametric, non-parametric, and so on, of a simulated cluster. And I'm giving here some references if you are interested in this. So this is, I think, clearly important. You can see here how well each algorithm can recover different properties of this galaxy cluster, for example, mass profile, magnification, substructure, orientation, ellipticity, so on. So the more filled this hexagon is, the better the strong lensing model can recover these properties. And you can see that there are very big differences between all of these algorithms, which have divided between the freeform or non-parametric and the parametric ones. Also to look at these two, the Katz and the Johnson and Sharon, which are basically using the same algorithm, which is the lens tool algorithm, but because we are using, there are different modelers, so they are probably using different constraints, different sample of galaxy clusters, different way of modeling, there is also a bias introduced from the assumptions that we do, even if using the same algorithm. So I believe this is an important part of the study of strong lensings for the future, where we will have a state-of-the-art exquisite observations with the James Webb Space Telescope, and now we have to try to assess the systematic uncertainties from our models in a robust way. I think I will just leave you with a summary, and I will just briefly mention that the RELICS data is publicly available. So both the HST imaging, as well as the photometric catalogs, the high redshift galaxy sample, and also the lens models. So I believe now almost all fields have at least one strong lensing model available to the community. And some of them, as I showed in this work, have several, which is, I think, better in order to assess the uncertainties from each technique. So yes, I think this is all I wanted to mention, and I'd be happy to take questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna, for this journey across these clusters. Questions, comments, curiosities? Maybe I can start you shown a plot of the convergence as a function of some radius for this very elongated structure. Which is the geometrical meaning of talking about the radius for a structure which is very well elongated? I mean, how do you calculate the radius? Which is the thing?
Yes. So yeah, basically, we take a center, and then it's just, yeah, we assume a spherical. I mean, we measure the mass within a circular aperture.
You're doing a computation assuming a spherical symmetry. Do you mind, Scott, that the discrepancy you have at some scales simply depend on these?
So it's true that in this case, because it's so elongated, like, I mean, at least in this cluster, there is no clear center of where, I wouldn't say there's a clear center.
If I miss center, or if there is a problem, or an issue of orientation of the cluster, would I expect similar discrepancies of the same radial scales, let's say?
So I think the inner profile would probably change to where we assume the center to be. So this was an arbitrary decision. So I believe we took one of the brightest galaxies and as a center, because it's I mean, I would say it's very arbitrary in this cluster where to take the center. So yes, the profile will change depending on where you take your center, and probably the difference will also depend on where you start computing. But I think we chose the brightest galaxy just to be completely arbitrary.
Indeed, for very large values of the radius, so the discrepancy is smaller, and indeed you're averaging over all the system. So regardless, yes, its elongation, you reduce the scatter. While on a small scale, it seems that the geometry of the system strongly affects the discrepancy. So it's just a matter of.
Yes, I think also this. I mean, we might be more sensitive to the substructures. For example, if we start computing at the brightest galaxy, and this will depend on how you model these substructures. So this is very different from the LTM, which assumes a symmetric power law distribution, or the lens tool and Glafic, which might assume other profiles for these galaxies, I would say.
Also, yes. Thank you. Other questions, comments?
I have a question.
Yeah, please.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for this presentation. It was really very interesting. Very nice piece of work when comparing all these different modeling approaches for the same cluster. So this is very, very interesting for people working using clusters as a tool, in fact. And there's something I want to know based on your experience, because you have been testing so many different codes. I have the impression that I could be wrong, that the majority of the differences between the different codes when modeling one single cluster came from either the spectroscopic redshift information that you have, or the amount or the number of constraints that you use. And in this respect, I want to know what is your opinion. If you want to use lensing clusters to access the properties of background galaxies, what is the best procedure, best way to go to properly take into account the errors or the system, all the sources of error systematics and internal errors of the different codes? What do you think? Is this better to use, as we do sometime, different codes with the same constraints, or we try to just to use one code, but we relax a little bit more in terms of the constraints that we are integrated in this code? What kind of approach do you, in your opinion, is the best for this kind of study?
Okay. Yes, thank you for the question. I think it's very interesting. Also for future strategies, as you say. So I would say that it depends on the constraints that we have in this cluster. For example, the Hubble Frontier Fields, which I'm just showing here, the work by Reni et al. 2020. So we can see that the modeling of these clusters is obviously fairly in agreement between the different techniques. I still believe that the systematic uncertainties or the dispersion of the measurements between these different codes is larger than the statistical uncertainty within each code. So I do believe that even in the case of these highly constrained clusters that have hundreds of multiple images with spectroscopic information, I think it's still useful to use different techniques to assess the differences. And it's true that in the case of the of these RELICS clusters, so most of these fields, as I mentioned, they don't have a large number of spectroscopic information. But this is also the case for a large majority of clusters, in the sense that they are not clearly, they're not the Hubble Frontier Fields, which has a very high depth observations, and therefore hundreds of multiple images have been identified and spectroscopically confirmed with MUSE and so on. So in the case of where we are using clusters that unfortunately don't have spectroscopic information, I also think it's still useful to use different codes, because this will allow us to, to assess the uncertainties in a more robust way. And for example, in the case of this cluster, to measure the magnifications, I would say there's still a very large error within techniques, which might say that it's not really useful to use these magnification estimates yet to study the intrinsic properties of these magnified galaxies, because the difference is so big with different techniques. So yes, and we cannot say that one is better than the other yet, because we don't, this can be used or assessed with simulations, but we don't know the true dark matter distribution of this real cluster. So I would say that in either case, it's useful to use different techniques.
Okay, and then you combine them together to try to retrieve the best possible, distribution of the error. I mean, the for the magnification, for instance, from each one of these images. But it's a bit complicated because in practice, we use also to compute the effective volume that we observe behind a given cluster. And yes, in this case, this introduces the calculation is quite complex, and it's sometimes very difficult, and using different codes, it's a bit of a nightmare. So it's there's a compromise to find. There's a compromise to find. So it's very, very nice to have your the work that you did, because this illustrates very well the point and the needs. So yeah, thank you very much for this discussion.
Thank you. I think you are muted, Carlo.
I'm muted, yes. Other comments. Yeah. I was curious about the catalog, the RELICS catalogs you have. Do you have also the, if yes, how many, for the spectroscopic information, the three-dimensional information about the galaxies for the cluster? Do you have the spectroscopy information, so only photometrics, as you said? And if this is the case, which is the accuracy of the photometric graphic view?
So you mean for the multiple images, or like
for all
objects?
Yeah, for all the objects.
So there is no specific follow-up spectroscopic flow from the RELICS collaboration. So I think if there are any spectroscopic information, it comes from the literature or other teams that have followed up these clusters, but it will be public. I mean, it will be in papers
Okay.
For each cluster, I would say.
So for each cluster, you have a photometric information.
Yes, which is based on multiband imaging from the HST. So basically, you have the magnitudes for all objects in mm-hmm. several bands, and also in Spitzer, I believe. Yes.
Okay.
And I don't know the. I think your last question of the accuracy I don't have this number in mind.
Yeah, the reason is was to understand if it is possible to map to produce a 3D map of the relics clusters and the accuracy of this 3D map.
You mean with on the line of sight?
Yeah, of course.
I don't think they have checked this actually based on photometric. I don't know any work that has done that with photometric. I think they have done this with maybe the clash clusters with spectroscopic from Muse, but I don't remember the reference.
Thank you. I see a question by Eric. Please, Eric.
Hey. Hello. So I was wondering, so this 41 clusters relics, it's still a lot of work. Do you think we will be able to do the same for the Euclid clusters, or how do you imagine?
Yes, I think it was a lot of work. Yes, these models were highly. It's a highly iterative process, as you know, and it takes quite some time to build a good strong lensing model. So, I think it took like. Probably several years, I think, from when the data was available from the HST imaging to the publication of this strong lensing model. So, and with Euclid, that we will have an even larger sample. I would say as of now, I think it's a different. A very complicated issue to do that, and also with different. Algorithms, which will imply the implication of many people for a long time. So I think it would be very useful, but I think it's a practically it's a complicated issue.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comment or question? If not, thank you, Anna, again.
Thank you.
And let me advertise the next week Cafe Club. Next week, we'll have Su Jun Li talking about galaxy lensing with the DSC mass catalog. So thank you.